types of things.
So in other words, Mr. Chair, until either the Boundary Commission or the Secretary of State give you notification, you don't know what the effective date is.
That's correct. We request a certain effective date, and we've gone for a delayed request based on needs like the utility companies and the tax assessor. But we can't assure that. It's only at Boundary Commission's discretion, and if there's an election, at the will of the people.
Let me ask a question here before you continue. Why would a city then go back and on audit and fine the telephone or gas company?
Oh, we're not fining. We're only collecting tax at the point in time service is delivered.
I thought that we had testimony from the previous fellow that there were fines assessed at times.
At times because they didn't get their systems online. They had some problems getting their systems online for the thing that I mentioned earlier. That was the main reason. In your earlier legislation, you required two things only, a legal description and a map. When they took those legal descriptions and tried to translate them into accounts, they had a difficulty because they don't keep their accounts by legal description, they keep their account by street address. We had no requirement to provide them that information, but we bent over backwards to do that after it was discovered that that was a problem. So we've already made that, type of agreement with the utilities and provided them with the street addresses that'll reduce their delay time. That was one of the problems.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you unless there's questions.
Okay. I would propose that we should meet with U.S. West and have an opportunity to sit down and work with them and see if we can figure out something that might work to the best advantage of the entities involved, and then propose some amendments to this bill that would solve the problem and work for the cities. Perhaps like what we do with the Bureau of Emergency Communications. What we do is I get, because they have to start responding with ambulance, with fire, with police, the minute that boundary changes. If it's at 12 o'clock midnight, they've got to be ready to go. So I give them all the information and get them all set up. When it's in effect, I let them know. They turn their systems on and go. Now, Portland could do that, but I can't speak for the smaller cities on that.
Can't speak for downtown Riddle.
Riddle, I don't know for sure.
Ms. Chairman, I'm Philip Fell from the League of Oregon Cities, and we are pleased that Susan could appear before you to explain some of the technical problems. The situation for some of the other cities around the state is in fact quite similar to Portland's. Many of those cities have the computer sophistication to be able to quite quickly supply addresses, street addresses, to emergency service personnel, to utilities. That's of course not true for all cities, and depending on the size of annexation, it's still an issue that can be dealt with even as informally as when someone goes home for lunch to drive through the neighborhood, the one block neighborhood, and write the addresses down. We can do that. If there were larger annexations in jurisdictions that did not have a computerized information system, that would present some difficulty in quickly compiling the data to give to the utilities. Now, we have two other charts that we have prepared. I don't know if you would like to see them. What we have done is drawn out a flow chart, the annexation process, so you can graphically see what our problems are. It's not clear to me whether you need us to take through that.
I'd like to see it, but unless everybody else here understands it, then I can catch up with you later. But no, I'm confused.
Okay. Well, first of all, you have the Boundary Commission process, and there's two types, as Representative Cease mentioned, of annexation. One, in which you have an election, and the other type is when you have no election. And there's different methods under these two types. Generally, the Boundary Commission action begins in an election process with the City Council. Either they've gotten a registered voter, 10% of them have petitioned to the City Council for the election, or they just by their own action or a Boundary Commission action initiated. You file that annexation with the Boundary Commission. 40 days after you file it, the Boundary Commission hears it. And then they have 90 days in which to make their decision. They can hold their decision over. There's people objecting, other cities involved, service providers that aren't happy. They can take their time, and they have up to 90 days to make that decision. Subsequent to that decision, there's a 45-day remonstrance period in which 10% of the voters, if they object, can collect remonstrance signatures. And then there's some, if there is going to be a vote on the annexation, it's upwards of 90 days before that election is set. It just depends on when the next election is. Just counting those days, I have 256 days of uncertainty in which we don't know if the election, if there is going to be an election, and if there is an election, if it's going to be successful. And if it is successful, then they take, the state certifies the election results, and then they take those results and they submit them to the Boundary Commission. And then on the next Boundary Commission hearing, the Boundary Commission finalizes the action. So there's still another delay beyond that. Now, all that time, we have the information, but we don't know whether it's effective or not.
If it went, excuse me, if it went the 256 days, you'd provide no service in that area during that time?
Generally not, because we provide services when we receive the revenues that pay for those services. And taxes is how you get your revenues. Besides that, we don't have any authority, generally, to provide services outside of our jurisdiction. Now, if there's no election,
Ms. Chair, Representative, may I quickly point out that that situation varies somewhat around the state. And it's often a function of city charter that some cities will extend services, although, in fact, the bulk of them are like the city of Portland. So it's not uniform, but Portland is more representative.
We have on a contract basis before provided services outside of boundaries. But in general,
just a question. When do you start hiring policemen? With the 30,000 that you brought in, and when do you convert the firefighters when you're moving into a fire
district?
They
move in the minute it's effective.
Are they just kind of hired and standing by?
Well, there's been new hires, and there's also been transfers of county deputies.
So, Mr. Chair.
Both. There, some 60 county deputies have been transferred over to the city in the course of the annexation. As you annex population, it triggers the transfer.
Then it cease.
Mr. Chair, weren't there cases in reference to the relationship between Multnomah County and the city of Portland, in reference to many of those annexations in mid-county agreements, that where the city started to provide some of those services before they were actually annexed?
We did in the past, Representative Cease, okay. And we ran into some fairly significant fiscal problems because of that policy, and city policymakers are not able to do that any longer because their chief objective is to protect their residents of the city who pay the taxes in the city.
Did you, Mr. Chair, also fall into complications in some cases where you were providing the service and then the folks didn't approve the annexation?
This indeed happened. Okay. Yes, it did.
Mr. Chair.
We
are the excise taxes, are they prorated based on the actual date that the annexation becomes effective?
Yes.
How is that handled? Is that handled by the utility has the responsibility to determine the prorating amount on the first billing?
I believe it's worked out with agreement with the city auditor's office. Yeah. In the non-boundary commission process, Marge, do you want to turn that page one more time, please? Thank you. Theirs is a little more simple in that they don't have to go through 40 days of filing with the boundary commission and then a boundary commission hearing and then the boundary commission having 90 days to decide. In all of their processes, once the city council acts, an annexation is filed with the Secretary of State. In the case of an election, the City Council would not act on a boundary change until after the election was successful. So it would go straight to the Secretary of State. That's why right now they really would argue very strongly to keeping the 30-day turnaround time that they have down there under the 100% landowner and the double majority in the island. Because right now they can process an annexation within 30 days. They can hear back from the Secretary of State. And for development, this really is a good deal for them. They said, in essence, if they needed to provide utilities with 60-day advance warning, what they would do is delay the annexation for an additional 60 days. So they turn it from a 30-day process to a 90-day, which seems to contradict the streamlining of the process that the legislative session put in effect the last 2 years.
One of the things that Mr. Wilhelms mentioned is that currently 3%, the first 3% is included in the rate base, and then the next 2% in the cases where it's a 5% rate. That is shown as a line item on the bill.
Yeah.
How is that decided? Who decided to do it that way? Is that in statute now, or was that a decision on the utilities part? Maybe Gary could answer that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wehage, it is in statute now.
It is in statute. Mm-hmm. A thought I had was that maybe we could go through a transition period where the utility simply calculates what the amount that's supposed to be maybe for the first month and a half or whatever it is to get everything entered, and take that amount and include that in the rate base, and then start with that process 2 months later.
Well, Representative Wehage, I think that there are some points in the annexation process that give us a fair amount of items to discuss with Mr. Wilhelms and the utilities. I'm sure that there are places that we can expedite our reporting to them with various degrees of surety, and I think the question that we'll have to discuss is if at this point we can tell you that we have an annexation scheduled to go to council, and which is subject to remonstrance, and it's going to cover this particular area, how much does that help you? Is there another point in the process which may have greater surety that indeed the result will be as submitted to the city council, that it would be helpful for you? So I think that we have plenty of room to sit down and talk with them and hopefully come back with something that we can all agree upon.
As I understand it, the utilities have an interest to show part of that tax as a line item as soon as possible to give it a little more visibility. I don't know if that's an accurate statement or not, but that's my understanding. But there could be a transition period where they simply calculate what is owed, include that in the rate base, and then start at the beginning of some month with the full taxation.
Representative Young.
I think most people would agree it wouldn't be equitable to charge a utility for something that they weren't capable of collecting if basically they're the tax collector in this case. I mean, it's not fair to charge something to somebody if they can't recover that money. Or maybe maybe you don't care.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Young, I think in earlier testimony...
Would you identify, please?
I'm Marge Gaffori with the City of Portland. I apologize. The City of Portland has worked very hard with the utility to try to get them the information they want in their form as timely as possible so that we're not putting them in a situation like that, because we don't believe that's fair for the utility. On the other hand... the bill as proposed puts us in the awkward position of not being able to comply with the bill and in effect being penalized for a bill that we can't comply with. So I think they recognize that. We recognize what they're trying to accomplish and what their problem is, and we want to help. But we don't want to put ourselves in a position of having problems for ourselves, and I believe that the utility is probably sympathetic to that too. So we'd like the opportunity to work out something with them that solves their problem and doesn't create a new one for ourselves.
Anything else, folks, you care to add? You think you can? You all know this gentleman here sitting behind you. Sit down, work something out, and come back to us, I guess.
Mr. Chair, I think this is a gratuitous comment, but I think it needs to be made
these parties act like they don't talk to each other at all, and I think they need to do that.
Is there anybody else out here care to comment in the audience? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll now close the hearing on 2516 and open it on 2697 relating to boundary changes.
Gary, you'll make it.
Go out there and introduce yourself, Gary.
Right.
Don't cut their phone off yet.
Technically, nobody signed up on the bill. You might want to ask Phil if they want to make some comments on it.
Phil, before you leave, you want to comment on this next bill? Nobody signed up.
He's not here right
now. Okay. Is there anybody else in the audience that cares? He's going incognito if he doesn't sign up. Table it.
Mr. Chairman, Burton Wiest with the Special Districts Association of Oregon, and Phil Fell has joined me from the League of Oregon Cities. House Bill 2697 is a bill that you may recall that when both the cities and special districts made their presentation to you during the introductory start of the session, we mentioned this issue as being a strong priority issue for us. It's a little complicated, but hopefully this won't be repetitive for all of you. But basically the situation is that in 1985, special districts came to the legislature along with cities and asked to change the annexation statutes so that the actual withdrawal of territory in an annexation would not occur except on July 1st to coincide with fiscal year. Let me re-explain that. The territory could be annexed at any time, but the financial change to the special district's budget would not occur until July 1st if the annexation occurred after March 31st. Now, the reason for that was so that a district didn't wind up with a budget put together based on 100 acres and then one day have 40 acres, yet they've still got a budget obligations, but they don't have any way to levy the taxes, the property taxes, or the fees to complete their budget. So an agreement was worked out with the cities in 1985 to allow this period of time so that the actual financial transfer wouldn't occur until July 1st. This will confuse even further your earlier bill here. That was done by the 85 session. When that was done, unknown to any of the parties participating, including the legislature, the section in that statute that exempted water districts and sanitary districts from automatic withdrawal at the time of annexation was dropped. We went back, and the Attorney General, as well as our own attorneys, went back and looked at the tapes and reviewed the hearings on the bill, and there was no mention of eliminating the automatic withdrawal or the prohibition against automatic withdrawal for water and sanitary districts. It just happened. It was one of those things that occurred. We went blissfully along, cities and districts, believing that when you annexed into a water and sanitary district, it wasn't automatically withdrawn, and cities would therefore reach agreements with these districts to continue to provide services in those areas. Assessors did not withdraw the territory from the district. And we went along doing that until last year when the City of Eugene, in a case before the Boundary Commission, raised the issue that there nowhere in the statute did that language exist anymore. An Attorney General's opinion was asked for. Mike Houston was in charge of that. They looked at the records and determined that, in fact, that had been taken out. And whether it was taken out willfully or not was not the issue. It had been taken out and voted on, so that the status of the law was that when you annexed into a water and sanitary district, that territory was in fact automatically withdrawn, in spite of any agreement you might have to the contrary. Now the problem with this is we have hundreds of annexations made by cities all over Oregon, where they have agreements with those service providers that they would continue to provide the service, because you don't turn the tap off on the water automatically upon annexation or run a sewer line. That's just not physically possible. Also, you have many cities where a district provides that service for the, you know, for the city. So you have a situation where we have literally hundreds of annexations that have been subject to these agreements that you could make an interpretation of were illegal agreements, or agreements at least that have no basis in law. Further complication, which came to light since we asked this bill to be drafted, is that we now have the question about elections. What about the people who ran for office, who thought they were still in the special district, but actually under the law were no longer in the special district, but were in the city, and who have been serving terms of office out there. So we have, I haven't been tabulating them because I don't think I want to know. We have a, I would suspect, a significant number of people who probably live in areas that have been annexed but still continued to serve on the special district board, believing that they were still in the special district. This is a problem for, obviously, for both cities and districts, and that's why in the off session when we became aware of this, along with the League of Oregon Cities, we resolved to bring a bill in and try to get it passed as soon as possible to undo what was done and return us to the system where the city has the ability to negotiate the service, or whether or not they withdraw the territory from water and sanitary districts, as was the case before 1985. Recognize this is hopefully it's a little complicated. I did give you copies, you may recall, of the Attorney General's opinion that went through all this in some detail during the beginning of the session. What we're asking today is that this bill be passed and that it be sped on its way so that we can hopefully undo as many problems as possible before they occur. I have become aware of the election problem and a couple, and one other issue since we asked the bill to be drafted. So we, or at least Phil has not had an opportunity to run this by his city attorneys, but we would like to ask that the committee make this bill somehow, probably a la as we did the some of the Boundary Commission legislation or the annexation legislation last session in the Portland area, that we make it retroactive back to September 1st, 1985. Because if we don't do that, the annexations that occurred between September of 85 and April 1st of 88 will fall into limbo. Those will still be, those agreements will still be void. Those elections will be for people who weren't qualified to run for office, and the assessor will have to go back and change district and city boundaries. So we are asking that this bill somehow be made retroactive back to September 1st of 85. Secondly, in my error, I had thought that I had asked for an emergency clause, and when I went back and looked after bad-mouthing legislative counsel, I discovered that I had, in fact, not asked for an emergency clause. And we definitely need the emergency clause on this bill so it can become effective before July 1st, which is when the whole next set of annexations get caught up in this problem. So we have those two amendments that we'd like to ask that you authorize legislative counsel to make.
Chair, may I ask a question?
James Cease.
Burton, in reference to the part that's added, paragraph B, 2B, paragraph 2B, the second sentence, where it says, withdrawal of territory from such a water sanitary district shall be governed by ORS. Does that ORS provide, let me ask you, if a city, say a city annexed, would the city have the option of deciding whether to withdraw it or not?
Yes.
So it would be up to the city in the, yes, in the agreement between the city and the district under that ORS?
Yes. The city at the time of the annexation under pre-85, and as we'd like to return it, the city had the option of saying, we're withdrawing the territory on July 1st, or we're not withdrawing it subject to an agreement. And that's what we want to return to. So each city and district can then renegotiate. They can have agreements now under the way the new law is, but the problem is the territory must be withdrawn. And that creates a complication because then the city has to enter in negotiations and it gets to be very complicated when you can't leave that territory in the district. They have to start trying to decide what percentage of a bond levy, what percentage of improvements that they put in that they're going to reimburse the district for. And it's just simply not a very effective way to do it, particularly if the city has no interest of ever withdrawing that territory from the district or for not doing it for several years.
Burton, in short form, describe those two amendments you wish again.
Okay, I have them.
Just happen to have them.
I would never dare to try to write a retroactivity amendment, so I didn't do that. But
you can handle an emergency clause.
Emergency clause, I just put add emergency. That well, I can handle.
I guess my question might be to the committee, are there objections to either of these amendments?
No, Mr. Chair, I think it'd be good to get them drafted and have them available for Thursday and get it moving if we could.
Would appreciate that, Mr. Chair. And then also, Phil, because I just became aware of this election issue yesterday in a meeting with special districts in East County, where Multnomah County has refused to let a couple of directors run for election in March because they say their office will no longer exist in July, even though the cities in question had not planned to physically withdraw that territory from the district. Raises all kinds of interesting questions about non-representation or whatever. So that's another reason to move this quickly and to make that retroactive back in time. But if we could have those, then Phil would have the opportunity to look at that retroactivity clause with his cities. They have not had a chance to look at that.
Mr. Chair.
Nancy's.
I think the bill makes sense, but I would have some questions, I think, about the retroactive aspect. Because what you're really saying is that the territory had been annexed, and because of a failure last time, or 85, whatever it was, the property was automatically withdrawn, mm-hmm. even though the city and the district may not have wanted to do that. And I guess I would want to know what the legal implications were of that withdrawal. Can you, in fact, now go back and say that, in fact, there wasn't a withdrawal? That's a nice one. I'm not sure what the answer to it is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cease, that's a tough issue two ways, because our understanding is that, in fact, most places have not automatically withdrawn. Assessors and county clerks have not. Some may have, but to the best of our knowledge, most have not. We had inquiries from Washington County and Clackamas County where I've talked to them, and they have not done that. No one even knew this. In fact, the Boundary Commission in Eugene told Eugene they were wrong, that land isn't automatically withdrawn. And that's how we wound up with the Attorney General's opinion. So I would guess, and I'm only speculating here, but I would guess that the overwhelming majority of counties aren't aware of this. And they have not been automatically withdrawing that territory. At least in Washington and Clackamas, I know they have.
John?
Burton, you mentioned the date of April 1st, 1988. Does this retroactivity clause need to be applicable to that period from September 1, 1985 to April 1, 1988, or can it just be applicable back to the September 1, 1985 date?
If the bill, in fact, is passed, and see, we may want to play it safe, if the bill is passed with an emergency clause before January and signed before July 1st, we only have to go back to the September 85 date. I think you probably legislative council would know how to write that. I think we should never assume that's going to happen, even though we've mm-hmm. contacted the governor's office and everybody's aware of the necessity to speed this along. So probably the answer to your question is legislative council would have to make it so that any annexations that occurred after that date to whenever are changed. Does that make sense, John?
So that April 1st, 1988 date doesn't have any particular significance in
no.
the chronology of this?
No. That is relevant only in that if we don't have the retroactivity clause, then annexations between September 1st, 85 and March 31st of 88 will not be affected by this bill. So the important date is the September 1st of 1985. Does that make sense?
Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Go ahead.
Philip Fell, League of Oregon Cities. I think I can be brief. Burton has essentially given the League's testimony on the substance of the bill. Representative Cease has given my testimony on the amendments. Essentially, we...
And you didn't even ask me.
Appreciate it. We agreed that indeed this is a problem, that it makes much more sense to enact this type of legislation to allow us to sort out at the local level just exactly how we choose to provide services in newly annexed areas. We think the bill gives us this opportunity. I intend to send the proposed amendments off yet this afternoon to a number of city attorneys and see what kind of issues they raise, and hopefully we'll be able to come back in here Thursday and say, great. If any of our attorneys raise some problems, I'll certainly contact Burton immediately, and we have the same objective, and if we need to say it differently, I think we can do that.
How do you send it off when we haven't even got it written yet?
We can talk about the concepts.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions of Representative Young?
Mr. Chair.
Just one second, please. You want to make a comment here.
I just wanted to comment that I served during the interim as the principal staff for the task force. And in response to Representative Wehage's question as to why this is constitutional in nature, we were advised by legislative counsel that because the existing county home rule authority for a home rule charter is in the Constitution, that it would be necessary to have Metro's home rule charter also be placed in the Constitution. So we were advised by legislative counsel that this was basically the way we had to go if we wanted Metro to have what is traditionally viewed as a home rule charter.
I think the point, though, there's a real distinction here. It's one thing for the legislature to say that a governing body like Metro has certain functions. Because in effect, what the legislature is doing may be taking those functions away from somebody else. Are we back on tune here? Mr. Chair, I would say, in reference to this difference between constitutional and statutory, it's one thing for the legislature to give functions to a local government, which in this case is Metro. It's quite another thing to say that the people, by charter, can give it function. The problem you've got, and this is why I understand, I gather that one provision is removed, you've got in the Portland area two counties that have home rule, one county that doesn't, and a bunch of cities that have home rule. If you give Metro home rule powers on functions, and it covers that area, what is to prevent its populace from deciding they want to add a function and take away from all those cities and those counties? Now, I'm not arguing that might not be desirable in some cases. It might well be desirable. I might find myself in some cases supporting that. But it seems to me that if you say, in effect, that the voters there through a district, now this is not a municipality. This is a district government. It's a big one, a multi-purpose district, but it is not a municipality. That if you allow the voters then to take powers by vote away from cities and counties which are home rule, you've got a constitutional question. You've got a constitutional problem. On the other hand, what this resolution has now done, which I think makes it next to meaningless, though not quite, is it's taken away the function side and talked only now about structure and form. And when you talk about structure and form, you can have 6 members of the Council of Metro, you can have 50 members, and directly it's no business of the cities or counties because it doesn't affect them. They can have a manager instead of an elected official. They might like one or the other, but it is not of direct concern to them. It's not going to impact on their function. You've got a function provision in this charter, or you allow the voters to add functions that way, it seems to me that's quite another matter. Now, on the other hand, the legislature says tomorrow, we direct Metro to perform this function. I think they could do that. But if you say the voters of Metro by charter can take a function away from cities and counties that have charters, I think it's quite another matter.
Mr. Chairman, could I just ask a question what he just said?
Representative,
I don't see it. Representative Cease, could you point out where this is only addressing functions?
And if you look at Representative Weehead, the section that was taken out.
I got that right here.
Subsection 3 says a district charter may provide for exercise by ordinance of powers granted to district by the constitutional laws of the state. In addition to any other district powers granted by law, and metropolitan service districts shall have power to.
Is this, are you referring to all of this then?
Yes.
Which has now been removed.
So it's been removed.
It's no longer in the measure we're considering.
Absolutely, that's the point. The point is what you've got left is structure and form, which you can handle by statute.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hostica.
Did you get your question answered, Representative
Hostica? I'm thinking.
If we're not talking about amending these, I think to give form to the discussion, I'd like to make a motion to move STR 2 to the floor, and then we can debate that motion. It seems what we're debating, so you'd accept that motion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hoska moves A and Gross Senate Joint Resolution 2 to the floor.
Mr. Chairman, can I talk about that?
Yes, to the motion.
Obviously, being from part of the state which is not immediately impacted on this, although it says any metropolitan service districts, there's a possibility that we may be impacted on that in my part of the state at some time. It seems to me that what this motion or what this resolution really places before the voters is whether Metro is a real government or not, and whether people are going to take it seriously as a government that has its own base of authority in the metropolitan area. And it seems to me that that question then would be decided by the voters of the people of the state, and I think they ought to give them the right to make that decision. The kind of suggestions that Representative Cease makes are, I believe, legitimate concerns, but so long as Metro's authorities and powers are dependent upon solely upon acts of legislative assembly, and as I understand this, it still says that the legislative assembly can make laws that will govern the exercise of the authorities of Metro, but it would give them some independent authority. But long as they're solely under the authority of the legislature, then to a certain extent they're not a real government. They're our child that we then give or take responsibilities from and alter their structure as we wish. So the question I think that's being put before the voters is really, is Metro a serious government or not? People of the state make that decision. If they make that decision, then I think they ought to be able to have the kind of powers that would be granted under a charter. And so I believe that we ought to move SJR 2. We ought to also look at all the other things that we have regarding Metro this session to let the legislature exercise its authority over their structure and function during the time that they don't have a charter. That's my speech in favor of my motion, Mr. Chairman.
I'm still perplexed on what to do here. I feel, as Representative Cease does, that the chances of this passing are very slight, very slight. And I'm concerned because I'm a supporter of Metro. And I think it's going to be harder to make the statutory changes that are being suggested here to remedy the situation, to give Metro the ability to structure itself, which I think makes sense, after the voters defeat this initiative, which says, no, we don't want them to structure themselves. They can't have a charter. I would prefer, I believe, going the statutory route. However, I am also influenced by Representative Hostica's statements about the idea of being a real government. I think that Metro should have the status of a real government. But strategically, I really question the political wisdom of your board to feel like they can do this. So in some ways, I feel like, well, if you want it, you guys go right with it. But I haven't decided how to vote on it on the basis of those remarks.
Representative Young?
Well, to kind of say what Senator Otto says. He's been accused of being the father of Metro, and he says Metro is a government that has no father. And I think that what we can do here is make it legitimate. And I know I'm prepared to put time into going around trying to explain what needs to be done. I'm sick and tired of having people constantly complain about what Metro's involved in and try to have to explain why they're doing solid waste that Washington County simply couldn't handle the problem, and the elected officials there just continually sidestepped issues that were too important to the area and to the citizens there to sidestep. And so somebody had to do it, and I think we just have to move to making it a legitimate form of government, and one that that the people feel like they've given some life to. But I mean, you go clear back to the ballot measure that put Metro into existence, and there was the Metropolitan Service District was already there, but it said we'll abolish the Columbia Region Association of Governments and transfer those powers to Metro. Well, still, people are saying, I voted to do away with CRAG. I didn't vote to make a super regional government. And I think that we just have to finally say, look, we're going to give you an opportunity to form the kind of government that you want here. And it probably won't be easy, but I'd like to get this discussion out of a committee of seven members here and five on the Senate and occasionally on the floor of the House and Senate, and get it right back to the people that are affected by this and they're going to be paying an increase. I mean, we're talking $160-some million a year that this outfit is taking out of people's pockets and providing services. And I think they can justify what we're getting for that money, but I think the people need to be drawn into the discussion and feel like they're a part of what's going on with Metro in terms of having some control over the form of government, and I, while this directly won't talk about the services they provide, possibly I think there'll be an approval of that. And I'll tell you, when I talk to local governments and I say, which one of these services do you want back? Then all of a sudden they start talking about things that have nothing to do with determining where garbage goes, or you say, well, are you unhappy with the transportation planning in the region? Oh, no, we've got no complaint there. We've got a lot of input. And what about the planning function? Well, we don't want to take that back on in terms of sometimes they'd like to do their urban growth boundary. But beyond that, they don't want to have any responsibility. And they usually applaud what Metro does in terms of urban growth boundaries other places. And so I think that this is worth a try. And if it doesn't work, then we'll come back and say, maybe we'll know something. If it passes in the metro area and doesn't other areas, we've got to take another run at it. But I think it is worth a try, and if it fails, it's not the first time. We made them go for a tax base, and they got 38% of the vote, and I don't think that was particularly bad. But we just keep trying things.
Representative, who was up first here, Cease or
I guess
Weir?
I was. Let me go ahead. First of all, Mr. Chair, there's nothing illegitimate about Metro. It's a legitimate body created by the people in the district, in the area. Now, there are a lot of people that consider it illegitimate. It was organized by action of this body and by action of the people in the area. It doesn't need to be reinforced, I think, by something else to make it legitimate. What I would really like to do is to give it more authority. But I'd like to give it more authority right now. This may or may not pass. I don't think it'll pass. But as indicated, you've got maybe an election in 90, plus a charter. So you've got, you know, 3-4 years. In the meantime, we're going to go through other legislation that will structure it and change the council number, and we'll do this and we'll do that. And we'll continue to play with it. And we will cover ourselves by saying we put a proposed charter on the ballot, and ho-ha, hoo-hum. In the meantime, the opportunity to give more authority has been lost. Now, what I'd prefer to do, if the committee would be a mind of that, I'm not sure they are, would be to have legislative council also give us a bill that would both provide for greater authority by statute and put this on the ballot as well. There's no reason you can't do both of them. And I would be supportive of that, but I hate to see the opportunity disappear to do something in the short haul. No problem with the long haul, but the long haul is so iffy that it doesn't guarantee us anything. That's my problem with it.
Mr. Chairman, well, since everybody else is predicting what the outcome of the election might be, I'm not sure it really has a bearing on whether we go ahead with this measure or not. I feel like that this would be passed by a vote of the people statewide, mainly because it doesn't affect most people. At least they'll perceive it as not affecting them. And my recollection has been that most of the things referred to the people in the state of Oregon statewide that simply appeared to clean up something have been readily passed. If it doesn't directly affect them, people usually vote for it. As far as Representative Cease's proposal to put something else, to pass something else right now that would put this into effect, at the same time referring something else to the voters, I wouldn't support that type of effort because I think the voters would perceive that as, gee, they decided to go ahead without us anyway. And we might see a backlash for that type of proposal that would cause this to fail. Comments have been made here about the ability of the people in Multnomah County to effectively control their local governments. I suppose there have been a few problems, but I would support this measure simply because I do believe that it's in the best interests of the people of this state to exercise local control. There's a sense of are we giving up something as the legislative body in this state? Are we giving up some control? Well, the fact is, yes, we are. Are we worried that that loss of control is going to cause problems in the future? Well, I think that may be a valid point to raise, but I think we have to put some faith in the voters of Multnomah County and the metro area. As far as legislative control, the way I read this is that it's still up to the legislature to come back in the next session and establish the procedures by which Metro would establish their home charter. So there still is some control that this legislative body would exercise upon passage of this measure. I still have some confusion about what subsection 3 under section 14 involves. District charter may provide for the exercise by ordinance of powers granted to the district subject to this constitution and the laws of this state. So it almost sounds as though the legislature in the future may still pass statutes that would be imposed upon Metro, and Metro would be required to comply with those statutes. So, gee, are we really giving up anything? I mean, if we see things going awry in the future with Metro, I think we can still come back and correct them. So I'm going to lend my support to this measure. I think it's a good idea to turn over to the local voters that ability. And I would hope others also would hear on this committee.
Is there any vote, please?
I move the question.
Any objections to moving the question? Not the. Ed, do you call the roll?
Representative Cease?
No.
Representative Hostica?
Aye.
Representative Oakley?
Aye.
Representative Stein?
No.
Representative Wehage?
Aye.
Representative Markham?
Aye.
Representative Young?
Aye.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The ayes have it.
Bang the devil.
Is there anything else come before the committee?
No, we're adjourned.
No, the motion's adopted.
Which one of you people...